Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week, somebody I'm really glad is with us, Republican New York State Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort from the 62nd District. The 62nd Senate District encompasses all of Niagara County, all of Orleans County, and the towns of Sweden and Ogden and Monroe County. Leader Ort, welcome to the Capital Connection. So glad you're with us.
David, thank you very much for having me. Good to be with you.
This is the first time you're on the Capital Connection with me, and I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself. Not just that we know that you're the Senate Minority Leader, and how about a little bit about your district and maybe one of the major issues you're focused on right now?
Sure. Well, so as you mentioned, I represent a beautiful part of New York State up here in Western New York. I have three border crossings, so I'm not quite into Canada, but I'm not far. I represent all of Niagara, Niagara Falls. I live in North Tonawanda with my wife, Megan, and, it goes east along Lake Ontario. I've been in the Senate since 2015. I was the mayor of my hometown of North Tonawanda before that. And before that, I was a personal financial advisor, and I served in the United States Army and the New York Army National Guard, deployed to Afghanistan in 2008. When I came home, I ran for mayor, got married, and then was elected to the Senate in 14, took office in 15. In my district, it's a rural district, so certainly agriculture issues and the economic issues of our farmers is a paramount issue. But I think right now, the migrant issue and this migrant crisis that is embroiling New York State has certainly had its impacts here in Western New York, where my district is, with several issues or several incidents, I should say, involving migrants. So that is probably the hot button issue at the moment. But like any district, like any elected official, there's never just one issue. There are a number of issues that we face here in Western New York, but it's a great part of the state. It's a great part of the world, and I'm very honored and blessed to be able to support the folks here.
We're speaking with New York State Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort. Senator, you did bring up the migrant issue. It is a big issue. We're seeing finger pointing now between Democrats in this state, the mayor and the governor. Part of this really is the federal government getting its act together, as well as some of the issues that are going on with the company .go in New York and the way that migrants have been sent upstate. Can I get your sort of take on all this?
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's you could do a whole program just on this issue, I'm sure. As you mentioned, there's no question the origin of this problem is certainly the federal government, their handling of the border, really just an absence of a plan or the absence of any kind of effort to secure the border or to deal with it at the border. And that led to, obviously, waves of asylum seekers, waves of people coming across the border, claiming asylum, and then, in a lot of cases, states where they were entering, either those states or the federal government moving those people to other places. And they've come to New York, and the reason they've come to New York, and this is where I think the local government, both the city and the state, come in, is New York City is a sanctuary city. They've openly said, if immigrants, illegal, migrant, whatever the term you want to use, if you can get to New York City, you will be welcomed, and New York City will not work even with federal law enforcement if there's someone who is there without documentation or is there without without status. And so naturally, places like New York, places like Chicago, other places that have made this declaration, they become a destination for folks who are here without status, without citizenship, who are looking to make a better life. I have no doubt about that, and no one else should. But the question is, it's been very clear that New York City can't handle them. There's no question. They have been flooded with these asylum seekers, these migrants. And what has happened is now New York City Mayor Eric Adams, he's contracted with a company, DACO, and they're shuttling these people all over the state. And what we know now is there's really no vetting. We don't know who these folks are. And now this is becoming other communities across New York State. They're getting sucked into this crisis because if New York City doesn't have the resources, if they don't have the space, you can probably safely assume that there's a lot of other communities that also will then be in the same position. And now you have Democrat local officials who are saying, we don't want busloads of migrants being sent here by New York City, who clearly is not doing, they're not doing any vetting. The federal government isn't doing any vetting. The governor has been really kind of absent on this until recently. There was a poll that came out. 82% of New Yorkers think this is a problem. And now you see the governor kind of coming into play. And while I welcome that, I just wish that she had done this earlier. She's the governor of the fifth largest state. She's obviously a Democrat. The U.S. Senate Majority Leader, who is a Democrat, is also from New York, Chuck Schumer. And obviously you have a Democrat in the White House. She has got to be able to leverage her position as governor to move the federal government into action in some way on this issue to help New York State, to help New York City. But again, to be fair, New York City, New York State, I think have in some way asked for this or have helped contribute to this, and either through a lack of action or through policies like sanctuary city policies. So now we're sort of reaping the whirlwinds of that, and it's going to take some real leadership and real action to get us out of this situation.
Is one action plan, perhaps, Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort, giving migrants the opportunity to get jobs?
Look, at getting someone a chance to get a job, that would be great. But that is a federal, they have to be vetted properly
right.
to be able to be employed here. And that takes time. It takes a significant amount of time. And what if the vetting, you know, you're moving them around. What if the vetting comes back and you say, oh, this person, you know what, this person is not able to work. Well, guess what? Now they're up in Utica, or they're in Binghamton, or they're in Buffalo. What happens to that person at that point? There's been no discussion about what happened. We're putting them up in hotels, or we try to put them up in college dorm rooms, and there's no, it's sort of like out of sight, out of mind. We put them in a house, we put them in a hotel room, and that's the end of it. Well, what about the job? Are there jobs for them to work at? Are there jobs they want to work? How do we make sure they're working? If they're not working, do we say you got to leave? I mean, those are all. So I think, yes, if they can work, but I think there's this sort of panacea that's thrown out there that once they're vetted, they can work, this is all going to be solved. I'm not so sure of that, because that takes a real lot of follow-through by both the federal government and the state government that so far we have not seen at all, or I have not seen anything that gives me the confidence that that is going to happen. So while I would love to see folks gainfully employed, if they are so able, I just don't know, is there a stipulation that they have to work? Because if they don't, and they're getting a hotel room, what is the incentive in some cases, right? The way we're handling this is all backwards. This is all backwards, and we're just not being honest. This isn't even humane, David, to the migrants.
Yeah, I was going to just say, Senator,
you come here from
pawns on a chessboard, and we haven't even talked about the children that would have to go to school.
That's correct. By the way, now you're going to send kids into schools. They don't speak the language. They don't speak English. They don't speak any, you know. So they're going into schools where English is a lot of times the predominant language. They're being thrust into these schools at different ages, right? So who knows what their education has been for the last year or two of their lives as they've trekked across South America and you know, made it to New York. And now they're going to be put into fifth grade or sixth grade or whatever it might be. What is the likelihood of their success or of that ability? I had to add, though, too, on the school piece. You know, I want to get on the humanitarian side as well, but on the school piece, David, just yesterday I saw, and I know this really roiled a lot of people. So during COVID, the last several years, the governor, and very, very clearly, the governor and others, people lost their jobs because they would not get the COVID vaccine. There's a nurse who lost her job because she wouldn't get the vaccine. And I know people feel different ways about that at the time, but that was that's a reality. It's an undeniable fact. That nurse, somewhere out in New York State, has children who are in school, who are going to start school next week. And there is a likelihood that there will be a migrant child in their class who is not vaccinated, potentially against many other things besides COVID. And that has to be galling. And I think that's, if you don't think that's galling, then you're just not being honest with yourself, because we went through this 2 years, especially here in New York, where it was vaccine or get out. It was vaccine or you're out of a job. It was vaccine or your kid can't go to school. And now, suddenly, that doesn't seem to matter as much with this particular group of folks. And so I just think that, what I can only label it that, I'll say dichotomy, some would say hypocrisy, that's kind of galling to a lot of people across the state, and I would say it should be. But again, the humanitarian side, you're shuttling people all. They come to New York City, you're shuttling them all over, moving them from hotel to hotel, the National Guard's coming in, and of course, because of certain bad actors, they're all going to get painted, you know, with the same brush.
Yeah.
And is that good for them? Are they safe in some of these communities, to be fair? I don't know. And that's my next concern, is that what if something happens to one of these migrants? Because you're moving them to places that are not as welcoming, or that have said, we don't feel comfortable with them. I just think you're asking for a disaster. You're taking a very difficult situation, and I believe that the ingredients are there for it to get worse because, again, of a lack of leadership, a lack of a plan. So hopefully, if nothing else, the poll numbers and all of this will result in a real plan from the federal government, whether it's doing something at the border, whether it's providing more resources, and then obviously the state, the governor, and county executives have to get real and have to be serious about, if you can't house these folks, if you can't provide the resources, if you really can't take care of them, then you have no business saying, bring them here, because it's not fair to the migrants, and it's certainly not fair to your constituents.
We're speaking with New York State Senate Minority Leader, Republican Conservative Robert Ort. Senator, I really appreciate those thoughts, and I think about what you said about it's only going to get worse, and I think that's correct. Even when you turn it to an issue like climate change and scientists suggesting, and even just war and other things that happen in the world, you see that there's going to be more and more and more and more people migrating, seeking better, more safer places to live where there aren't the crazy floods and fires and everything else we've been seeing as of late increasing.
That's right. These migratory patterns are not a flash in the pan. You know, like anything else, whether it's you're talking about, you know, storms, whether you're talking about what you saw during COVID, whether you're whatever situation, you know, you want to come up with. If you're in a poor nation, the impact on you is worse, right? If your house is flooded away and you don't have flood insurance, you live in a third world country down in South America, or a country that has a corrupt government, or a country that is racked by civil strife and drug cartels and all that kind of stuff, of course, you're going to want to try to find a better way for yourself. But I think there are things that places like the United States can also do about that, right? We can try, to me, we've spent a long time turning a blind eye to what's going on down south of the United States, in Mexico, in South America, rather than, you know, we've spent billions of dollars in countries that are thousands of miles away, and yet there are countries that are very close to our borders that are racked by the same kinds of tyrants and corruption and violence. And yet we sort of turn a blind eye to it. And that's, I think, a big part of what's driving people as well to seek shelter and to seek a life here in the United States. And that's noble and that's great. But the question is, what, you know, immigration generally works in waves. In other words, people come in and then there's an assimilation period. There's a period where they be sort of enter into that melting pot that is America. What we're seeing, there's no assimilation period because the waves just keep coming to the point where the system really isn't able to handle it the same way. And long term, you end up with second class citizens because these folks never really get to buy into the American dream the way it's promised to them because they don't. We're just not set up to handle this level of immigration at the state level and clearly at the federal level. And so, you know, to me, I think you're right. The United States needs to take a long-term view of this issue because it's not going away. And again, the sanctuary city policies in the state of New York, that means even if you get a handle on the migrants who are here today, you're going to have more on your doorstep tomorrow. So unless you can stem that flow or deal, you know, come up with an answer to more and more who are coming here, I'm very concerned about, you know, what this means for New York State and certainly what it means for the country. And I think the public is, too. I don't think I'm alone with that. I think the public is very concerned. I've called on my colleagues across the aisle who run both houses. Let's go back to Albany. Democrats have admitted this is a crisis. So if that's the case, let's go back. Let's do a special session to try and deal with this crisis. There are things that we as a legislature can do or can certainly look at doing to try to address it. And I think the folks in New York deserve nothing less.
Senator Robert Ord, you recently returned from a visit to Israel with the American Israeli Education Foundation. First of all, why did you go? How does that benefit New York and your role as Senate Minority Leader? And tell us what you found out.
Well, I was invited in two parts. One, as a statewide leader, you know, certainly as a Republican conference leader, the Senate Minority Leader, that's a statewide leadership role. Very often I travel around New York State. And in New York, very large Jewish population across the state, obviously in New York City, very significant. And so there's a lot of connections. I mean, when I was over in Israel, just anecdotally, the number of people that I met who grew up in New York and moved to Israel, or their parents lived in New York and then they moved to Israel where they were born, or they have family that still live in New York. So there's a special relationship between Israel and the United States, but there's really a special relationship between Israel and the state of New York, just because of the Jewish population that we have. And I think that alone made it a positive or necessitated me going over there. I had never been to Israel, and my status as a veteran, they were bringing veterans over, state legislators who had served, to try to, I think, also better understand the security situation and the geopolitical situation in Israel. And I can tell you, it is even more complex than I thought. It is even more precarious and tenuous than I thought when I went over there. And it gives you the whole trip, going to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Museum, meeting with Israeli Defense Forces officials, meeting with regular Israelis, you know, who are living in farming communities and who go to work in Tel Aviv, and religious leaders and political leaders. It did give me a better understanding of the people, but also I think the psyche over there, which is that they're surrounded by folks who have basically said they want Israel removed. They don't want the nation of Israel to be there. And that's that's not exactly a good negotiating position to start from, right? When I say, you know, David, I don't think you should be here, period. It's tough to move off of that, right? It's tough to move away from that. And I think the people in Israel feel very strong that they're not going anywhere. You know, post-Holocaust, the nation of Israel was created. And they everything they have there, they've had to fight for through multiple wars, through multiple conflicts. They deal with the threat of daily attacks, if you would. Some of them are reported, some of them are not. But I think that situation, I think they believe it's important that the United States and elected leaders from the state level to the federal level understand what they're dealing with, understand the complexity, and bring that back home here, because you've seen over the years, President Biden has not invited Prime Minister Netanyahu to the White House. It's the first time, I think maybe ever, since the creation of Israel, that the Prime Minister of Israel has not been invited to the White House. And also, you know, you see other stuff. You see the BDS movement getting, you know, support in certain areas. You see certain elected leaders at the federal level who will not go to Israel. You see a little bit of an uptick, I think, in anti-Semitic comments or attacks or things of that nature. And I think all those things give the folks in Israel cause for concern. And I think they're just doubling down on making sure that they have strong partners here in the United States. So for me, it was the trip of a lifetime. But I think in my role as Senate Minority Leader with the large Jewish population we have here, when I'm talking to those folks, whether it's in New York City or in Williamsville or in Rochester or anywhere in between, I think it gives me just a little more credibility to be able to speak to some of those issues or at least hear from them having been over there. And I know a lot of my friends who are Jewish, it's a big deal to them that I went. And so it was a great trip. And something I'll never forget.
Senator Robert Ort, we're running out of time rapidly here, but I wanted to address the fact, and you brought it up, that you're a veteran. And while I'm at it, thank you for your service. But in that experience, in that veteran experience, I'm wondering, you know, WAMC has reported on the Holyoke Veterans Home. We've seen time and again, we see the way veterans often aren't treated well when they come back. How does New York do when it comes to the way it treats its veterans?
So, you know, I think when we talk about veterans issues, and I get these questions a lot, obviously in the United States, a lot of that is really the responsibility, the role of the federal government,
right,
as far as, you know, the VA and benefits and all of those things. New York, I think, you know, certainly offers a lot of programs and additional resources that other states don't, that veterans also are eligible for, whether it be workforce development programs, work job training programs, whether it be financial assistance. So all those things, they might not be specific to veterans, but certainly veterans are certainly eligible for those. And so I think living in New York, sometimes those programs, you know, substance abuse programs, mental health programs, they can be very helpful to that community. Specifically, the Joseph P. Dwyer program, that is a New York State program. It was actually started by former state senator, former congressman, and former gubernatorial candidate, Lee Zeldin, when he was in the Senate. It has now expanded all across the state. I believe every county in New York has a Dwyer program. It's named for Joseph P. Dwyer, PFC Joseph P. Dwyer, who served in Iraq and who sadly took his life upon returning. And it's a peer-to-peer program. And what we know about peer-to-peer programs is very often in any discipline, whether it's veterans or substance abuse or whatever it might be, peer-to-peer works. And for veterans, it really works because a lot of times veterans, you know, they're not going to talk to a doctor. They're not going to talk to someone, but they will talk to someone who's worn a pair of combat boots because they trust that person, because
right,
they know that person knows where I've been, knows what I've had to do. And this peer-to-peer program has undoubtedly saved lives, and in some cases, it's helped veterans maybe get clinical or professional help that they need through that channel, if you would. But it's a great program. I helped bring it to Niagara and Orleans, but it's all over the state now, and I think that's a very specific example of what New York's doing above and beyond what happens at the federal level.
On the Capitol Connection, we're speaking with New York State Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort. So what's your relationship like with the Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins? Do you talk often? Do you get to get your ideas heard? Do you ever have a one-on-one?
We have one-on-ones. Her and I do talk, you know, I guess often might be a subjective term, but we certainly talk multiple times through the year. We tend to talk a lot, obviously, during session, and then we'll talk several times off session, depending on what's going on. We have a very, I think, a good working relationship. It's civil. Obviously, we have different ideas of,
sure,
of where the state should go. But we're both leaders. And by the way, she was the minority leader. So she was in my role,
right,
for many years. And I think that does give her at least an appreciation for sort of the other side of the majority-minority coin. And I think that can be helpful, at least when I'm having conversations with her. And we're both trying to do the best thing for our members and the people of the state. So, you know, we have a good working relationship. In fact, I spoke to her 2 weeks ago for about a half hour. And even when we're discussing tense things or maybe things we don't agree on, we usually are able to do so in a very, very civil, very cordial way. And I hope that continues, and I've been very appreciative of that.
So you feel you're being heard?
Yes.
And what about the governor, Kathy Hochul? I mean, she's from upstate, right? This is a first for New York in many ways, with a female governor and someone from western part of the state.
You know, the governor, who I've known at least tangentially for many years. She was my member of Congress. Obviously she's from Western New York. She lives or still has a place about, 35 minutes from where I live. But, that relationship, it's better than it was with Governor Cuomo, which might not be saying a whole lot, but it's better. And so I'm always, I'm always open. My phone's here. I've had conversations with her. I've had conversations with her staff at certain points over the last year. They've been generally positive. I would like to have more, but, she is the governor. And, in this business, you always want to keep that channel open. You never want to close that door because obviously we need to be working together for the people in New York and for my membership. So, I'm always here. I'm happy to work with her where we can. And obviously there's going to be times where I have to be maybe critical or on the other side, but that's the nature of this. She's been in politics a long time. She certainly knows that better than anybody. And she knows, I hope, that doesn't mean she can't pick the phone up and we can't talk and maybe work through things where we agree. Because I do think there's a lot of things where we agree on, but obviously in the media and the news, you're going to hear more about the times where we disagree. And that's not a criticism. That's just sort of a function, I think, of the world we live in.
Well, I know they listen to this program, so I think message was sent.
I hope so. That's why I did it, David, because I know they listen to the program. So.
Well, no question about it. And that's the kind of program this needs to be. We have to be able to have conversations with everybody, not only legislators, lawmakers, but the folks that are running the agencies and the people who are lobbying
right.
the government. And we need to have conversations, even when we disagree, in a civil manner. So I hope that we will be able to continue our conversation with State Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort, Republican from the 62nd District along the lake. Senator Ort, what a great conversation. I hope to have you back for more.
David, thank you very much for your time. Thank you to your listeners, and happy to come back anytime.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.